One Shining Podcast is headed to North Carolina for a live show in Durham at the Carolina Theater before Carolina Duke play on Saturday. The show will be March 8th at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at carolinatheater.org as well as via the link in the episode description. Again, we will be live in Durham, North Carolina at the Carolina Theater of Durham on Friday, March 8th at 8 p.m. and you can get your tickets now.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we've got Kyle Mann on the show, and we also have a situation where we are going to bring on, against all odds, very own Harry to break down his Caitlin Clark predictions that have been more correct than not. So that is good news for Harry. So it'll be a fun show. We'll have Kyle Mann on. We'll talk about the good, the bad, the ugly in college basketball. And then Harry will go through some of these conference tournaments and some of the best bets there and just some general thoughts. He loves Creighton. We'll talk about Creighton a little bit. We'll also talk about the Saturday showcases. We got Kentucky, Tennessee, Kansas, Houston, Carolina, Duke. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is our last show in Los Angeles before we head back to North Carolina. Kyle, anything else before we get into today's episode?
It's heating up. There's a big shakeup in the Big East. Tate thinks it's good. I don't know what's happening, but first, Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. We're out of timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. It is Monday, March 4th, and you know what that means. It is a manic Monday in March, and joining us is Kyle Mann. Kyle Mann, great to see you.
Good to see you too. You know, I thought we maybe weren't going to be able to see each other today. We had conversations over the weekend. It's been a little wild over here.
It's a true manic Monday for you, right? That's what we're learning.
Yeah. It's been a lot. Yeah. Meg tripped and broke her patella into like a cookie. I wouldn't recommend anyone do that. So we've been, you're pretty immobile if you break your patella, turns out, you know, you need it. Your body needs that. So she didn't get hit by a mob boss or anything. I didn't do it. I didn't Tanya Harding, my wife. Yeah, so nobody be too worried. But yeah, I'm glad we got to figure it out.
Yeah. Thoughts and prayers, condolences to Meg as she gets better. We are sending our love here from One Shining Podcast. We want her to feel better. It is a day of injuries because it's not just Meg that went down. Tyler Kolek, the reigning Big East player of the year, who's averaged 15 points, 7.6 assists, 4 rebounds for Marquette this year. He is apparently, reportedly, will be missing the final 2 games against UConn and Xavier of the regular season, and he will be reevaluated prior to the team's Big East tournament opener on March 14th. This is big news. What's our concern level on Tyler Kolek being out, or is this okay that he misses these final 2 games, especially with the confidence, defier that we saw last time that they played UConn?
We were kind of having a conversation over text about him, you and I and Kyle, and just kind of talking about what this does to sort of the distribution of their touches. I thought your take was pretty interesting, Tate, about how that could work out. I mean, when you have a primary that you depend on so much, sometimes it can make you a little more predictable. It can get guys out of rhythm. You never know. You know, Kyle was talking about like the volume of assists. And that's a natural thing that I think people think whenever like a primary goes down, you think we might be getting to the heart of kind of what the Ewing theory really is and why it happens, because what can happen is you become a little less predictable. Like you said, guys, it changes their rhythm. The scout changes, you know, on you. It has a big ripple effect. I mean, but I think we're all kind of in agreement here that they need Kolek. It's just kind of a matter of, I don't know. And then also let's just talk to that. Like, I mean, it's about your, get your take off, Tate. You had an interesting one, I thought.
Well, I just think Kolek is so dominant of a ball handler. And sometimes, especially in that Connecticut game, once they kind of figured out what Kolek wanted to do and who he wanted to get the ball to in the corner, Cam Jones kicking it out, just a driving kick, simple pick and pop, situations for Kolek. It just felt like it was so redundant that they were able to take away everything he wanted to do. And then Marquette from there just fell apart. But when you have a situation where Cam Jones, Stevie Mitchell, David Joplin, right? These three-headed guys, you don't know which one is going to be the primary ball handler, which one's going to be creating offense. I mean, Cam Jones is a guy that we've seen could drop 30-plus points at any time. I just think that maybe UConn has more to worry about as opposed to just worrying about Kolek getting the ball to other guys. And they basically decided in that game, let's let him beat us scoring. And Kolek wanted to pass the ball and kick it out. And they're just like, it was turnovers galore. So I just think the look for UConn will be a little bit different without Kolek. And sometimes when you lose a primary guy, it makes the other guys step up. They get better. And then when the other guy comes back, they're a better team for it. I don't know what that theory is called, but I have seen it work before. North Carolina with Ty Lawson, when he went out in 2009, I mean, it just felt like other guys kind of stood in his stead and stepped up. And then when he came back in the tournament, it's like, we're playing with house money. We have this other guy here who can get things done for us. What a joy this is. What a gift. So I think that's the way to frame it if you're Marquette, to say, let's get better while he's gone. And when he comes back, we'll be a team that can really contend and go to Phoenix.
Yeah, if you look at their team, I mean, you're talking about it being a three-headed monster. It is, but Kolek still is in like the 97th percentile for like ball screen touches in the country. So, you know, 42.2% of their ball screen touches go through Kolek. So he is pretty heavily involved. And I think there is something to that. I don't know. In some situations though, with the Lawson situation, was it a case of guys needing to get experience, do you think? And how does that compare to what Marquette is going through here? Because I feel like it's not necessarily an experience thing with Cam Jones or with Joplin. I don't know. How would you compare and contrast those in that way?
I just think you get more shots for those guys. You get more confidence because you're getting more shots. You have more responsibility. I think it frees up the offense a little bit. It's not as rigid. You know, I'm not going to say that Marquette's going to go in there and beat Connecticut, because God knows we got to talk about how insane that they look right now. But I just think maybe it puts a little bit more onus on Connecticut to adjust in real time as to who has the hot hand and who's creating. And maybe Shaka has more fun being like, Stevie Mitchell, this is your time. Or like Cam Jones, this is your moment. You know what I mean? Go take over. So I'm not predicting a Marquette upset by any means, but I think it could be a nice silver lining if some of these guys, especially like a Stevie Mitchell, gets more and more confidence, because I think he's a really good player for this team. So that's the Marquette storyline there. So let's do the good, the bad, the ugly. And I want to talk about the good, because the good guy of the week was Shaheen Holloway. Gets blown out by Creighton, gets blown out by Connecticut. And when he's in Gamble Pavilion at Connecticut, he had this great good guy moment. Dan Hurley is completely out of his coach's box. He's basically next to Shaheen Holloway. Shaheen Holloway walks over to him and has like a nice little laugh, like a little butt pat, just like, haha, you know what I mean? Look at us. look at what we're able to do. We can wander anywhere here. And as they're getting blown out, I was just like, Shaheen Holloway is somehow taking this in stride. And that is the most good guy move you can ever have. The Seton Hall part of it is a little bit of a disaster, but just, we can talk about Shaheen first. I mean, is that worrisome to see him so kind of, you know, happy go lucky as he's getting blown out? Or is that kind of give you like a little bit of a belief in his reserve confidence? Because it seems like he still believes in Kadari Richmond and the rest of his team.
And he should. I mean, he should believe in those guys in some ways. In some ways, maybe not, that are worrisome that we can talk about. I mean, Shaheen knows what it is. I think that's kind of a hallmark of his personality. You know, when he's got it, he's very confident. You could tell he just kind of had a resigned, like, you know.
Oh, it's over.
Well, he was pretty realistic about it. And whenever you watch him in the post game, even when something terse happens between him and another coach, he's always calmly just like, you know, well, like, I don't know. He doesn't have that kind of irrational thing that you see from coaches sometimes. But I mean, this Seton Hall team, this was when they got down, I think it was early. They kept it within 10 in the first half. It was one of those ones where you could kind of feel the water Like you could see, it was like a dam where you could see those little spots where the water was shooting through. You're like, there's a lot of water behind that wall mm-hmm. that's going to come through at any moment. And the problem with, you know, we've talked about UConn. I almost feel like we're getting to the point where we shouldn't talk about UConn because, well, they really burned us last time around. Granted, they hit a buzzsaw, as Hurley said, with Creighton. Maybe if we talk about them, Tate, it'll work out for us better. We can give them the old reverse jinx. But, yeah, this Seton Hall team is just not built to come back. So once the dam did break, the water, it was like there was no
it was over,
the water
right?
out.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's game. That's what Shaheen Holloway looked at his bench and said, unfortunately, that's game. Let's just have a nice afternoon here.
Yeah, unlike the Memphis UAB game, which we can talk about, which was the polar opposite. But yeah, you just saw them, this team, like this Seton Hall team, I had it written down here. Yeah, they're 20th percentile in the country from three, so 31.4%. And they've been even worse lately, 28.3%. That's just hard. UConn just keeps coming at you. And we talked a lot about kind of their uphill pressure with like their shooters. They just get you moving. They're unselfish. There was one sequence that I was like, this is just a backbreaker. Like they did a pretty good job defending the shooters with Cam Spencer and Caravan on one particular play. And you saw Klingon set like a down screen. So he got Bediako on the high side of him because he's trying to like watch these shooters. Well, Klingon is one of the biggest MFers alive. He just seals Bediako high and they were just like, all right, easy entry. And Klingon scores. So that just kind of describes kind of like the inventory of things that you have to consider when you're playing UConn. And it's a tough task, man. It was, and one that that Seton Hall wasn't equipped to come back from once it got bad.
Yeah, this was a full-on Hurley day. Dan Hurley was in full dad mode. They won their 13th game by 20 or more points. They lead the country in that stat. Also, after the game, Tristan Newton, they won their first Big East championship outright since 1999. He said, quote, "We feel that it's harder to win the Big East regular season than the national championship," which, I mean, old Big East heads, that is like giving them catnip. I mean, they love every bit of that sentence. They probably read it back every night before they go to bed. And then we had the Dan Hurley, like I said, in dad mode. I mean, he said, "I considered starting Andrew." It was his son's senior day, Andrew Hurley. We both talked about it. We felt like we could play well enough to get him his chance late. Man, that was a pressure free throw that he hit late. That was the last shot of the year in Gamble. So proud of him. So Andrew Hurley closes out the regular season for his dad. Dan Hurley's in tears. We've talked about Dan Hurley, the maniac, a whole lot. And I think most people see him as this absolute maniac. But it was like, I felt like as I watched this game, it was like, oh, I remember that Dan Hurley is a real human being and he has real emotions. And I thought it was like a big win for Dan Hurley, to be quite honest.
That's the thing about these guys that run hot like that. It goes both ways. You know, he's mm-hmm. probably a big crier with his kid, I'm sure. I understand. But like, I don't know. I was watching the other day that clip of Bob Knight at like Pat Knight's senior day. You know, he like started tearing up and stuff. So I think, I don't know. I feel like there's sort of beneath the sort of veneer of fieriness, sometimes there can be like a very thin wall to like vulnerability and emotional behavior. I was thinking though about him scoring the last points though. It's kind of like, you know, whenever you're playing video games, man, I mean, you know, one guy, say if you're playing Mario Kart, you play 20 rounds, you know, the last game, you know, it matters. So that's going to get remembered. He scored the last point of the game. So I don't want to downplay that. So I just think, yeah, it was nice to see Hurley get on the board there at the end.
Yeah, it was good to just see the Hurleys have this like actual family moment. And the Hurleys are an important basketball family at large in the game. You know what I mean? From the state of New Jersey down to Bobby at Duke and, you know, obviously Dan now at Connecticut. So they've touched three different places in a major way. So, I mean, it's a good family to see kind of have this spotlight. And, you know, Connecticut absolutely drills Seton Hall in case you missed it. We've done the good. Now let's do the bag. Originally, I had Tennessee here. And I think Tennessee, Alabama was a bag show down and a big win for Tennessee. So just want to give a shout out to Rick Barnes of Tennessee. But let's stay in the state of Tennessee and let's talk about the other guy who's a bag man there, Penny Hardaway. Memphis, in case you missed it, they were getting absolutely blitzed by UAB. It was game over. There was nothing to see here. Everybody can move on. And then the second half happened and it was like night and day. That's probably the easiest way to put it. Memphis wins the second half 60-26 against UAB and they end up winning this game scoring 105 points or 106 points, excuse me. Your thoughts when you saw the score in the first half, your thoughts when you saw the final, and your thoughts when you saw that Memphis ended up winning this game, because it took me like three or four double takes.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of hanging back and letting UAB, you know, UAB obviously got hot. This is not a good UAB team. I think they were like 18-10 coming into this game. They were just hanging back and letting them get to their shots. I think it was Alejandro had like four in the first half. Overall, UAB had eight threes in the first half, and then they didn't hit another one. The moment, I mean, and the key thing, and I told you this game kind of reminded me of a couple different games. There was an Arizona-Kansas game, I think from like 2003, where Arizona got down like 20 points, and then they came back and won by like 17. That's a random pull. That was an awesome game. Shout out Salim Stoudemire. The other one that reminded me of was Louisville and Duke, from 2019, mainly in the fact that like the moment that Duke started junking the game, you could see this oh shit in the eyes of Louisville. Bless their hearts, during that era, that crowd was extremely drunk. I'm sure that was a shock. This was a home game for Memphis when they came back, but the moment that they started junking it up, you could see UAB. They just wilted. It was really wild. Like, I think Memphis went on a 7-0 run to end the first half, and then they went on like an 18-0 run. You could just see that, you know, there was nothing that UAB was going to be able to do about it. It was such a, I don't know. Do you think it's so much that they quit, or like who deserves more credit? Like, do you blame UAB for quitting, or do you give Memphis credit for like great pressure defense? Because it didn't seem that crazy of pressure defense. It really just seemed like UAB just let go of the rope completely to me.
I just think that they thought the game was over. And then when David Jones and Quinterly started hitting shots, and you know, Naquan Tomlin had a great game as well. I mean, shout out to him. I mean, the biggest January acquisition in the game is finally showing that he can be a real part of this team. And then
here's one of our preseason guys, Naquan Tomlin. Yeah.
Right. And then you got DeAndre Williams, who didn't even get a waiver to play for Memphis. He's there at the game as like a mascot slash coach slash, you know, cheerleader,
mascot
whatever
for
he
what?
Is. I don't know. I mean, it's incredible, though, that like he's so invested in this team. And it was a very good vibes win for Penny Hardaway. You know what I mean? As this whole like academic investigation is going on, like there's a lot of smoke, as there always is, you know, when Penny's involved with this program. This was like a much needed, like, I mean, he always tweets, God got us. I mean, this felt like a God got us kind of game. You know what I mean? Like, this was completely out of the way, should not have happened. And then all of a sudden we get a Memphis miracle. So I'm happy for Penny Hardaway, because he needed something to kind of change I mean, they were number 10 in the country and fell off the face of the earth. And now, you know what I mean? Now people are saying, I don't know, maybe Memphis could make a run. Maybe they could win maybe they could win the AAC and get to the tournament.
What are they, 22-8 now, or 21-8 now? The resume, for all the free fall talk that went on during, you know, that sort of middle of the schedule, you know, there, the record's not as bad as you would think. Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, Tomlin had good moments in this one. David Jones had good moments. Quinterly is one of those guys where I'm just like, I really vacillate wildly one way and the other with him. I'll be like, sometimes you'll look at him and be like, that's one of the most talented creators in the country. And then the rest of the time, you'll just be like, what in the world is he thinking? Like, he just really has that kind of wild variance for me when I'm watching him.
I feel like Boogie Ellis has that for me as well. Like, there's moments where I watch Boogie and I'm like, oh, now I see what you see. You know what I mean? Like, this is what you're supposed to see with Boogie. And then sometimes he's just MIA. And funny enough, Boogie came from Memphis, so I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a redux. But anytime we can shout out the Jelly Fam, we'll shout out the Jelly Fam. So love to see that. So we've done the good. We've done the bad. Let's do the ugly. Wisconsin was my choice for the ugly, just because it has been ugly basketball, to say the least. But I think there's something uglier out there. It is the Nike March Madness shooting shirts. Have you seen these, Kyle, man?
I saw you tweet about it. Yeah.
They've done it again. Last year, the big slogan was soul. But it was spelled like a shoe soul, but it was supposed to be referencing like the soul of the game. It was a total dud. And if you haven't seen those shirts, go check them out. But it would be like Zag Soul or something like that. That would be an example. This year, it's literally insert mascot energy, like BDE, Big Duke energy, or whatever it is like that. So it's Tar Heels energy, Duke energy, Zags energy. This has got to be the laziest example of these shirts ever. I mean, we've seen some bad ones before. Adidas has done some bad ones. Under Armour's done some bad ones. But I think Nike, for the first time, I'm like, these are the worst ones. Like, Nike is officially worse than Under Armour and Adidas. And I never thought I'd be at that point. So I wanted to get your thoughts. The shooting shirts matter. at this point, because that used to be a thing, like basketball never stops, all that sort of stuff. Now I feel like we've gone away from them, and we've gone so away from them that Nike doesn't even care anymore.
Well, I feel like the golden age of the shooting shirt was like, it was like a separate, almost, it was almost had as much like design integrity as the jersey itself. You remember, like,
right.
now if this is like what we're doing, this is just something that you would pull out, like that you could wear to the bar, like to the game or something. I don't know if they're trying to do like manufacture something that is like more affordable than like a really well-made shoe. I bought the shooting shirt like every year there for a while. It was like my favorite thing to wear to school. Like, even I remember when Dry Fit kind of became a thing and you could buy like the really, really nice, well-made ones. Are they not doing those anymore? That's something like, I feel like the shooting shirts UNC wore like in the late 90s were like iconic with like the Argyle and stuff, right?
Absolutely. That used to be the thing. Like when whatever team was going to the national championship or you thought they were making a run, like my brother and I would buy the shooting shirt and then, you know, you'd wear it around. Like I got like the 05 shooting shirt, the 09 shooting shirt. We got the 82 like Redux Mitchell and Ness shooting shirt from like when Jordan won with the UNC, like, you know, Argyle down the side. I mean, this is supposed to be a thing. You know what I mean? It's also important for the March Madness.
Are we the first people to notice this, that this isn't a thing anymore? I feel like I'm usually on top of this kind of thing. Maybe you noticed it and I just didn't. I'm surprised that this isn't being talked about.
Well, I mean, I was just looking back from 2014. That's as far as I could go back. I mean, there was the always repping era, which was terrible, but we let it slide. There was family, which is terrible, but we let it slide. Never stops. And it would just be like the logo and then never stops. I thought that was like the best version of like the new iteration of it all. And then we had like mentality. So it was like Duke mentality or whatever mentality. But they're all just getting worse and worse. And I feel like I think this is rock bottom. And my goal by pointing it out is that it will be better next year. I mean, sometimes just put the logo on there with a Nike check and we'd be happy.
We don't need a brand statement on there. You know, I think that just the brand statements Miami's probably the worst. I mean, the Heat culture brand statement thing is just, we don't need that. You know, we don't need that kind of a statement on an official wear type thing. Like it's just, that's, And you're right. It is kind of lazy. Like it's like it's not unique. I want to like write something on there that's unique to UNC or something that's unique to Duke. Like some kind of thing that is like something you all do before the game or a cheer or a chant or something that's lingo from within the program itself. It's not unique when you do that thing. When you add, like, everybody doesn't have the same brand statement, you know.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things where at the end of the day, Nike, you're Nike. You could do better. You know that this is not good. And it's like an and-one knockoff, right? I mean, these are like and-one, like wannabe slogans that are not quite there and they don't pack the same punch. And stop trying to steal from and-one and be better. This is college basketball. We can do good. We can do good things, I promise. One last thing, Drake's IG stories about Rob Dillingham. He had a question the other day. He just put a picture up of Rob and he said, "How shifty is Rob today?" with like the smoke emoji. And he said, "These are my daily questions for the universe." So does this mean that Rob Dillingham is the biggest star in college basketball on the men's side? And asking you the question that Drake was asking, how shifty is Rob Dillingham? I mean, your thoughts. I mean, the freshman five closed out a big win on Saturday. That was great to see.
He's going to become, you know, I had this conversation with Waz yesterday on the Ringer NBA show that, like, he's going to become more of a star. It's always fun to kind of see the players that, you know, the national, you know, because you and I kind of like straddle both sides of, you know, we talk NBA, we talk college with people, you know, on our various different, you know, shows and things. It's always interesting to me to kind of see the players that I know once the national eyes get on them. You just kind of wait for the reaction. Mm-hmm. And Rob's one of them, man. I mean, like, he continues to do things that, like, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday of, like, you know, is he better than Jalen Green right now? I feel like he probably is. Like, and, you know, that was a guy who went in the top five. And I'm just like, number two. He went number two. He's just so... He's also super erratic. He's also so bad defensively sometimes that you can't have him in the game. There's some kind of Jordan Poole vibes with him. But he's probably the most talented creator in the country, wouldn't you say? Like, just like in terms of flair, in terms of creativity, the kinds of shots he can make. Who's more talented than Rob Dillingham on that front, in your opinion?
I figured out who Rob is, and it's taken me some time because, you know, when he was in high school, everyone's like, he's the next AI, he's the next this. You know, there were some times where I was like, is he a Bones Highland type? I was trying to figure out who he is, and then I figured it out this weekend. He's the Microwave 2.0. He's Vinnie Johnson. He is, that is who he is in my mind, and I think, like, the erratic behavior is part of the microwave experience, you know what I mean? Sometimes the microwave's a little too hot. It needs to be cooled down, you know what I mean?
Which, like, Cal unplugs it sometimes.
Yeah, like, he's the Microwave 2.0, and I threw that at BJ Armstrong, and BJ was like, I'm gonna think about that. And then he texted me and was like, I like it. Cause they're both 6'2". They're both a little lean. I'm not gonna say that they're like the franchise guy themselves, but they can go win you a game in a series. And I feel like that's who Rob could be in the future. So I'm going with the Microwave 2.0.
He also could get you beat. That's the conversation, yes, I've had with people lately. Is I'm like, thank God they have some other steady guys that they don't have to totally lean on him. Can you imagine if he was helming his own team? Some of the stuff he's somebody that could average 25 and he does things. I'm not saying this is a one-to-one analog, but like, he does some like Kyrie finishing stuff around the basket.
Yeah.
The way he's able to like take contact in the air and hang on to the ball and go over bigger players and then do the too small thing over and over again. I don't think he's quite the handler. I don't think he's quite as shifty. I don't think his like start stop, like Kyrie's big thing is like getting low and start stop. And then he has all the kind of creative angles. He's not quite to that extent, but he's such a great shooter, man. Like I think his shooting coming into college was really underrated. You just watched. He was the difference. I mean, in that game when they were coming back, Arkansas, when they like went middle ball screen and like empty side ball screen with him and Ivicic, Arkansas just didn't have an answer. So, he's fun to watch. I mean, I'm excited for the national media to watch Rob Dillingham. So, it's going to be fun.
I feel like he's our best. He's our bet. Like, when people were saying, like, there's no star, like Bill Simmons is like, there's no stars in men's college basketball. I'm trying to serve him the platter of Rob Dillingham. I'm trying to get him to believe in Jared McCain, Rob Dillingham, you know, even like a Mac at Harvard. You know what I mean? Some of these young guys that are
freshmen. I don't think we got to get him to believe in McCain. He's been one of the foremost McCain prophets, right? I think
he saw McCain at like 10th grade and it's fallen. Like, Bill, if you want to know about high school basketball right now, Bill Simmons is his corner. That is what he's locked in on.
LA high school basketball.
LA high school basketball.
I'm surprised we don't have a show. Yeah,
I'm down. Let's get someone to host it. We'll go on and just fire off takes. Let's take a quick break. Kyle, man, I hope that you have a great rest of the day, and I hope it's less manic for you. Appreciate you coming on the show. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have Against All Odds' very own Harry to talk about some of these conference tournaments. We'll be right back. Get ready, North Carolina. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, is launching soon and just in time for the biggest college basketball tournament of the year. Right now, you can get $100 in bonus bets just for signing up before March 11th, plus another $200 when you bet your first $5. Just go to FanDuel.com/OSP and join today. Then you'll be all set to bet when FanDuel was officially live. Soon, you'll be able to bet on all your favorite teams and all your favorite sports, from parlays to prop bets and boxing to basketball. FanDuel has it all. So head to FanDuel.com/OSP to sign up and lock in $100 in bonus bets now and $200 more after you make your first $5 bet. Make every moment more with FanDuel. Availability subject to regulatory approval. 21 or older and present in NC. Bonuses are issued in non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 30 days after FanDuel accepts his first real money sports wager in NC. Unique user identity verification required. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms for both offers at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And now, joining us on One Shining Podcast for the first time in this iteration, you know him from Against All Odds, and you know him from the Super Bowl 52-pound weight drop-off, one of the greatest sagas of my career. He is the great Harry Gagnon. Harry, great to see you, man.
Awesome, Tate. Pleasure for being on here. Thank you for inviting me. This is gonna be great. Love it, man.
I want to do some housekeeping up top because you're okay. One of my favorite people, Harry, and we have told some stories about our times together. Yeah, and right behind you, I just want to start there. If you're not looking at this, Harry has his cartoon Harry behind him, which has become one of my favorite things on social media. These little clips that you put together. Where did this come from, and how can I get more Harry in my life? Because it's great.
We're trying. We're trying to build it. We figured me and my buddies, we said, you know, if I'm going to be fat, I better try to make some money or be at least not even make money, but have some humor behind it. So the Harry cartoon we did every Thursday for the NFL season, I gave out a pick, didn't do the greatest, got really screwed on a bunch of picks today. I mean, I lost like 7-8 games by a grand total of like 8 points by the spread, which is crazy. I mean, I got screwed every which way, but still, we had a lot of fun with it. A lot of great feedback. I'm Vizen, as you know, our good pal Michael Lombardi loves it as well. He put it up on Vizen every single week when we went over games on Wednesday for Thursday Night Football. We had it already, so just trying to get more stuff out there for Harry stuff, you know. And this is being on your show definitely helps, pal.
I like the way that you're putting it out there, and I love that Lombardi loves it. And you know, Lombardi's on a tear right now. This is the best time. If you are not listening to Michael Lombardi, you should tune in, because this is when he's talking about evaluating the evaluators. One of my favorite phrases of Michael Lombardi, and he is evaluating a lot of people. Speaking of evaluations, let's talk about Caitlin Clark, because you are the Caitlin Clark whisperer, Harry. There's a lot of people that have been trying to figure out when she's going to break these records. Pistol Pete's record was the most recent one. After the game, she said, somebody called me Ponytail Pete. I thought it was kind of funny. You know Ponytail Pete, and you got this right. And it happened on a technical free throw. I want to get into the minutia of that. But what made you sense that this was going to be the moment when Caitlin would break the record?
Well, before the last record, the women's record, when she broke about a week and a half ago, Sal and I, against all odds, Tate, both predicted that she would hit a three-pointer to do that. Now, I went a step further, and I said, you know what? She's got moxie. She's got charisma. She's got confidence. So I even went and said, not only is it going to be a three, I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be a logo three. And it just happened to be. I mean, she just nailed it perfectly. It was a great shot and everything. So in this spot, though, we all guessed it again, all the guys on Against All Odds, but I went with free throw at 9-1. Those guys thought I was crazy, but I said, look, it's not like they're playing some schlub. They're playing the number 2 team in the country in Ohio State. So there's a lot of pride here. I don't think the Buckeyes are going to allow her to just shoot at will wherever she wants and hit for wherever and then just sit there and take it. I mean, again, they're number 2 in the country. So I think this is going to be I said this is going to be a very boring situation for the Buckeyes. They foul. What big deal? Maybe they lose the game, but they don't let her get away with a three-pointer, which she wants to. You just foul her and send her to the line, give her 2 free points, and went that way. Now, that's not exactly how it happened, because it went on a technical with a second to go before halftime. But she got 2 free throws. Obviously, she can take the technical, as she's a phenomenal free throw shooter. And just went up there without a problem. Nailed it. The first one, nailed the second one, broke the record.
Yeah, Caitlin Clark, 54 30-point games. That's the most in college basketball by any man or woman since 2000. So, I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, like, a supreme star in the sport. But I want to talk about, like, there is, you mentioned the moxie, the confidence. Like, I'm on the side of, I love Caitlin Clark. I think Caitlin Clark is great for the game of basketball. I'm enamored by watching her. I think she's an incredible watch. But we had this other group, this other faction of people that are drumming up the fact that they think she flopped on the court storm moment. They think she flopped on this technical foul moment. And it feels like, I saw Giannis tweeted this the other day. He said, hate is the new love. And I think this is the kind of the world that we live in. Like, if you're successful and you're at a certain level, like, the hate, actually, you have to kind of flip it and say, well, they hate me so much because they want to love me. Is this the condition that we're getting to with Caitlin Clark, where there is this backlash just because she is such a, like, singular star in her own right?
I guess, but it's more than anything. It's just, she's that good. She's so good. Yeah, right. She's so good at shooting that there's got to be hate somewhere. There's going to be hate coming from somewhere. The flop on the court storming, I don't know. I mean, she looks like she took a pretty good hit there. I mean, I think she's already announced that she's going to be in the WNBA next year. I think that's going to be, more than anything, I think that's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be huge juice for the association.
And Indiana, she, right? I mean, she's going to the perfect state.
Right,
she's going to go
Indiana,
right, with Aaliyah Boston, who's like the star of last year, you know, right, with South Carolina. So it's going to be perfect.
You think she's going to, you think she'll, in her first season for Indiana, by the, you know, Indiana hasn't been, you know, they're one of the worst teams in the past few years in the WNBA record wise. You think she'll just come there and, like you said, with Boston, all of a sudden she might just go for, she might get 22, 23 a game? You don't think it'll, it'll be any different from her from college to transitioning over to the WNBA?
I think she actually might have more space in the WNBA, and I think it's actually going to be great for her. And I think, if anything, Adam Silver and the powers that be in the NBA want Caitlin Clark to be successful. They have Ionescu, you know, obviously in New York. They're going to figure out what to do in Los Angeles, but I think the Sparks have some talent out here. I mean, you're kind of getting into this new wave of players that people care about. And even J.C. Sheldon, right, on Ohio State. I'm like, she's going to be a good player in the WNBA. Like, I mean, and she even had a moment with Caitlin Clark where they're going back and forth. So I just think there's good players. And you really just need to carry the interest from college to the WNBA. That's been the problem. The changeover, people seemingly don't follow the stars, but I feel like Caitlin is at that level where they will.
And I'm a fan. I'm a total fan of hers. I love watching her shoot. I love her seeing her go for 40 and have 8 threes in a game and just like, and Brother Brian, if you remember, Tate, when you we were all working together, Brother Brian and me are just huge fans of the WNBA. We bet it. We follow it more than Sal and Parlay Kid do. So I'm all in with her in the WNBA and going to Indiana. I can't wait.
Yeah, Bill Simmons called me and professed his love for college basketball, specifically women's college basketball, and told me I needed to be talking about it more on the show. And I immediately thought of you and Brother Bri. I was like, that is who I got to bring on the show. I got to bring in the experts that are watching this at the highest level.
By the way, now that we are speaking about women's college basketball, I do. How good should I feel at the beginning of the season? I bought a ticket for South Carolina at +750 to win the championship. And
that's incredible value.
Was their first non-double digit win at home in 28 games. I'm not concerned about that one bit, but at +750, I should be looking pretty good with South Carolina, right?
Yeah, I love Pow Pow. One, it's a great last name. She also shoots 50% from three. So every time she hits a three, it's just Pow Pow. I think South Carolina, it feels like a redemption type year. And even when they're down, like they were down at halftime to Tennessee. I talked about this with Brother Bri. It just felt like they were going to win the game. Like, I'm never worried when I watch South Carolina. I feel like it's almost inevitable that they're going to go win. So they don't have the star power, I would say, that they had, you know, before. But Dawn Staley is the star, which is kind of the way it is in men's college basketball, where the coach is the star. And +750 is crazy. That's a
I got a big in the season. Plus, if I need any inside info or anything, I'm sure you and Dawn are best pals. So I'd probably get info from you.
I think Dawn Staley likes Kyle. I don't know about me, but I think she was waiting for Kyle to ask her a question.
What's not to like?
At the Wooden Awards last year. So I thought that was good. One last thing on the Caitlin Clark thing. Do we think she should have shot the technical free throws? Because I've seen some people talk about this as well, because we talk about moments in basketball. She was going to pass Pistol Pete. There's 0.3 on the clock or whatever. They could have sent Gabby Marshall to make the free throws. I think Gabby would have made the free throws. And then you save the Caitlin Clark moment for the second half, third quarter. I had actually had a bet in on the third quarter when she would break the record. So I was a little upset that she had these free throws at the end. But how do you feel about that? I've seen some people go back and forth saying it was a little anticlimactic.
Very interesting. You could have waited. You know, everyone could have waited, been in their seats, not even get up at halftime, just wait till the third quarter starts, and just you know what's on the line there. But now I see Brother Bri had also for her to win it in the third, or to do it in the third quarter. So he's getting info from you, I guess, right?
Yeah, right. I think both of us. I really wanted her to drop like 20 in the first quarter, but as we know, she was playing Ohio State. They're face guarding her 94 feet.
Took a little while for her to get going.
Right. Well, I mean, anytime that you have, I mean, even if you play pickup and you have someone that like picks you up face guarding you full court, you're like, I'm not having as much fun as I was once having playing basketball. So there you go. Caitlin Clark, the Caitlin Clark Whisperer. Harry, we love to see it. Let's talk about confidence level and some of these conference winners. In case you missed it, the first wave of conference tournaments are starting. WCC, A-Sun, Big Sky, Big South, Big West, CAA, Horizon, MVC, the Fun Belt, Summit League, Southland, all these tournaments are happening this week. And also we got women's women's tournaments happening this weekend as well. But I want to talk about some of these tournaments that you believe in, as far as the teams that are going to go handle business. I want to start with the WCC. One, they have the funniest bracket. If you don't know the WCC tournament, it's basically a staggered bracket where the 1 and 2 of the conference are literally in the semifinals already, yeah, and teams play to get there. The two teams, obviously St. Mary's, who won the regular season, Gonzaga, who just beat St. Mary's in a very emphatic win to kind of send a statement to the rest of the league. Are we buying the hype of Gonzaga going and handling business to win the WCC, or do we have someone else in this conference that we believe in, Harry?
Well, this is a first-time thing, right, Tate? First time ever where we've seen a team actually win this conference in the regular season that isn't Gonzaga. This is another year where this is one year where no one's really talking about Gonzaga going into the tournament because St. Mary's has been fantastic this year. Now, I know they had won 14 in a row, but lost on Saturday at home. But it's been a nice win, too, at home to close out the regular season against their rivals. But they didn't need it. They're still the number one seed. And they beat Gonzaga on the road, so they know they can do that as well. St. Mary's is not, they've been in the tournament plenty. They get in. They won a couple games in the past couple years, too. So this is a team that's not just sneaking up on us. We know what they're all about, what they're capable of doing. They play some great defense. They've held teams, a lot of teams, in the 50s this year. They play their defense. They play tough. And this should be fun. I mean, this conference is always fun in Vegas. It always seems to come down to those two teams as well. I'm going to say that maybe St. Mary's wins the tournament here just because they didn't win on Saturday. Late night game on ESPN, didn't get it done, but didn't need to. And now when the chips are on the table while you're in Vegas, needless to say, that this might be their time to get it done.
Yeah, I do think I said this a couple shows ago. I think Aiden Mahaney's going to have a good March, and I feel like it starts in the WCC tournament, and I feel like St. Mary's has been the better team all year. And I think the Gonzaga, Nimhard, EK, all these guys, when they came to Gonzaga this year, they were talking about making a run in March. And I think that there's a little bit of confidence brewing in that locker room with that Gonzaga team. So I think that they have goals bigger than the WCC tournament. So that gives me a little bit of hope. And you mentioned it. I mean, going back to the 90s, the WCC tournament has basically been St. Mary's, Gonzaga, or BYU when they were in the WCC. Right. I mean, there is really nobody else from the outside that has been able to crack in there and win this tournament. So it's kind of a foregone conclusion. It's going to be one of those two teams. I like to pick with St. Mary's. Let's go to the WAC. Grand Canyon, GCU, is a team that you and I have been a fan of from afar. We talked about going to a game. They have an incredible atmosphere. It does feel like this is GCU's conference to lose, their tournament to lose. Are we buying into GCU to go win this thing?
Look, I'm about 20 minutes away from 35th Avenue and Camelback Road right now where Grand Canyon University is at. And I'm just they're the best team in Phoenix. They blow away. No one talks about Arizona State, Tate. It's all about Grand Canyon, their home folks, their home court advantage. They're fantastic. 26-4 this season. Of course, I don't know, maybe they are the best team when it comes to having a home court advantage. They're 16-0. The fans are crazy. They've made it to the tournament a couple years in a row. They're not sneaking up on anybody either, really, but I just think that overall here, this team, what they can do defensively as well, sort of like St. Mary's a little bit, can shut you down on the inside. Good rebounding team as well. They could surprise. They could win. This is the year where they could surprise and win a first-round game.
Yeah, Jerry Colangelo, this is his dream. This is what he created. This is his vision of a basketball paradise. He has a Drew, a Homer son on his side, and they have the basketball gods in their back pocket, I feel like. So Grand Canyon is there. One year we're going to get a Sweet 16 run from Grand Canyon, and I feel like the world's going to be on alert that this is a real big-time program on the way.
And you're going to still see. You're still going to – let's just say they do win a game. People are going to say, who's this Grand Canyon? Never heard of them before. You're still going to get those type of people. But meanwhile, me and you, before the season started on Against All Odds, when we did the college basketball preview, we were all in on Grand Canyon from day one this season.
Well, another team we were all in on is Will Wade and the Bayou Bandits. The Southland Conference, McNeese State, a.k.a. McNeese, is what they're going by now. He is dropping the state. It's a very strong move from Will Wade. This man knows how to brand things. He is a bad guy himself. Do we feel like the Bayou Bandits will get this at-large bid if they don't win the tournament? I think that's the bigger question when it comes to McNeese State.
I want to say probably not, but still 15-1 in conference, 26-3 overall. But But, you know, something that's also, people might just say, okay, big deal about that. They beat nobodies. Well, they won on the road at UAB by 20, who's got a decent record, UAB does. They beat Michigan. I know Michigan's down the season and everything, but still won by double digits in Ann Arbor and a very tough place to win in Richmond against VCU. They won on the road there too. So, I mean, teams are scheduling McNeese. They didn't think that they were going to be this good, and McNeese went into their house and smoked them. So that's three quality non-conference wins against good conferences. Maybe. Maybe they get in that large.
I think they win the Southland, so it doesn't matter. But I will say I have heard from multiple people that Will Wade was trying to schedule some more games against some more quality opponents, and they were trying not to schedule him actively. So that says a lot about how they view this team. And Shahada Wells is, you know, I think he's fourth in the country in steals. I mean, there's a lot of talent on this team.
McNeese could be the Furman of last year, right? Maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The most interesting, I think, of these small conference matchups, we have the Missouri Valley, the MVC, Indiana State and Drake, DeVries, the DeVries family. They've been on a tear. Darian DeVries, obviously head coach, done a great job there. Tucker DeVries still there for this Drake team. And then we got Robbie Avila. I've been corrected. I used to say Avila, but it's Avila. And at Indiana State, I mean, he has become, they're calling him Larry Nerd now, instead of Larry Bird, which is great. Who do you like in the MVC? And do you think that that we could have a chance where both these teams, Drake and Indiana State, actually end up playing in March?
Yeah. Look, Avila is how it's pronounced, correct?
Right.
Avila. 18 points a game, 56% shooting from the field, and he shoots from outside too. It's just not all inside. He's been fantastic. Yeah. Love this conference. I've loved it for a long time. Drake is a team that has been taking over the conference in the last few years and made it to the tournament. But Indiana State's right there, neck and neck with them. I think if one of those two, as long as one of those two win the conference tournament, the other one will be an at-large and get in as well. You feel the same? Mm.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like Drake, for whatever reason, I feel like Drake's going to win this tournament. And then Indiana State's going to be what everybody wants to see in March. The committee gets a little bit of pressure. You know, we've seen Larry Nerd everywhere, and everybody wants to see him play
the
tournament.
Everyone wants to see him, right?
Yeah, right. And I think the committee at some level, they take what the zeitgeist is saying, and they say this is the tournament that we want to have because we're trying to make the most money. And Avila is one of those guys who brings in a draw. So I think he gets in even if they don't win the tournament. And a two-bid MVC is something to keep an eye on. One other team, and I guess this is more regular season than the conference tournament itself, but you have a lot of faith, and you and I have talked about this team, Creighton. And I think Creighton is a team that we saw them in the Elite Eight last year. They were so close to making the Final Four. I'm not going to say that they're going to go win the Big East tournament per se, but I think this is a team that can make it to Phoenix. And the more I watch and the more I see Ashworth grow into who he is as a guard and continue to shoot the deep ball well, I just start to believe. I mean, I love Trey Alexander. I love Baylor Shireman. And I really, really like Ryan Kalkbrenner, those three guys together. So what are your thoughts on Creighton? And do we think this could be a Final Four team?
Well, you know, I gave them out last year to win the whole thing. And, that last second foul against against San Diego State could have, who knows what could have happened. Anyways, I'm on him again. I was on him again when we did the show against all odds when we did a preview. I'm on Creighton again for the second year in a row. 12th in the country, 20-8, solid. I think they're clicking right now at the right time. Last five wins have been by 14 or more, and two of those wins are included against Marquette and Connecticut. Certainly capable of making another run. They have nice non-conference wins versus Alabama and Loyola Chicago, who's actually 21-8 and right there for the still has a chance, outside chance to win the Atlantic 10. You mentioned the three-headed monster, really, with Kalkbrenner, Alexander, and Shireman. Shireman, senior, 12 of 24 in his last two games from three-point range. I think he's overall, I mean, look, I said to you before that Kalkbrenner needed to get a bit tougher down low. And I think he's done that this season. He's getting 17 points a game. He's getting almost 8 rebounds, shooting 65%. Doesn't take bad shots, which I really like out of him. And Alexander's been fantastic. I think he's established himself as one of the best point guards in the country. But I think it's going to come down to Shireman overall in terms of his three-point shooting, how far this Creighton team can go.
And I think Shireman is built for it. And I you know, a lot of people get up in arms, like in the Blue Jay land. I keep saying Baylor Shireman's their best player, most important player, most valuable player, whatever you want to call it. Even though I love Trey Alexander's game, I'm not saying that he's probably the most talented in NBA potential right. there, potential. Right? Creighton. But I think currently in the game as it is, I think Shireman's the most important player for this team. And I think he can take them a long way. I learned a lot in Maui last year watching him play. Just, you know, the way he's able to connect with guys, the way that he's able to find guys. I mean, he's got great vision, great passing, great shooting, you know, and just a great way of carrying himself, right?
Yeah. And again, if this Creighton team can get on a roll again, it's just, you know, how many times have we seen free throws cost teams down the stretch, especially in clutch situations? Get the ball to Shireman. The guy shoots like 85%, 86% from the free throw line as well. Make sure he gets the ball when you have a couple point lead, and he'll take care of business at the free throw line. Creighton can move on. And again, I think Kalkbrenner, even like I said, needed to be tougher this year. He has been down low. I think he's got to be real tough down low when it comes to the tournament. He's got to be a key guy too.
I like that they got a little depth. You know, Mason Miller there, mm-hmm. Farabello there, Jason Green, who had a big game against Connecticut. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that they have some guys that are stepping up too. So Creighton, I like that pick. Let's look at Saturday. We got some showcase games, Harry. I want to get your thoughts on these. First up, we got Kentucky, Tennessee. Do we think Kentucky can be a team that can make some noise against Tennessee on Saturday, or did the Vols lock up the SEC?
I kind of think the Vols locked up the SEC. That was a great win on the road in Tuscaloosa over the weekend. Tennessee won in Lexington by double digits against Kentucky. They scored 103 that game. They're 14-1 at home. The game's going to be in Tennessee. And I just think Kentucky, the last two wins, nice wins, but really could have lost those ones. Probably should have lost to Mississippi State on the road in Starkville. And it took a long time for them to tear away from Arkansas, who's not very good on Saturday. So I think overall here, Tennessee at home gets it done against Kentucky.
Yeah, I think Kentucky plays with their food a little bit too much. It's like they tinker with all these lineups, and then all of a sudden they find something that works in the game, and then they go on these little spurts and runs, but then they have these lull periods. It will probably work out in March. I think Kentucky's going to be a scary team to match sure. up with for anybody, but I still have my concerns there, and I think Tennessee is just more prim and proper. They're on their stuff. They know who they are, and Dalton Kconnect can go win you a game. Let's look at Kansas-Houston. Houston is the new darling in the Big 12. Yeah. They came into the dog park and took it over. Kansas has obviously been that team for quite some time. Do we think McCullough being back in this Kansas team can kind of get a nice win leading into the conference tournament and their run in March?
Not really. I don't think so. It's just this Kansas team has been down. It's just not one of those teams that we're
they just don't have the depth. You know what I mean? Yeah, Furphy's really the only hope.
We're not accustomed to seeing this out of Kansas. I mean, 9-7 in conference, that's it. 3-6 on the road, lost by 13 to Houston earlier this season. Houston 16-0 at home at the Tillman Fertitta Center, where I guess years ago when I worked in Vegas, the Fertittas were my bosses. In case you didn't know that, Tate. So
I love that. Tillman. So Fertitta, you're a Houston Rocket deep down. You love James Harden.
So, but this Houston team is a team that just can manhandle you and then go on runs, and they're not a great shooting team, but still it doesn't matter because their defense is all over the place. They can shut you down and all of a sudden go on an 8 to 10 point run, and you can't catch up to them.
Yeah, and we saw it with Jamal Shetty closing out that Oklahoma game. They do have a closer. I like Cryer a lot, and I feel like nobody talks about Emmanuel Sharp, but Emmanuel Sharp is a nice piece for this team and someone that can go get him a bucket as well. So Houston, a really good team. I think they're going to be a tough out for anybody. They look like they're destined to go to the Final Four, so that'll be a good game. Right. Last one, the biggest game of the weekend. I'm going to be back in North Carolina. On the Blue Devils. Cameron Indoor. Harry, North Carolina won the first game. They're trying to sweep the series this season. Do you believe the Tar Heels can get it done in Durham, or are you buying into the Blue Devils?
No, I think Carolina can get it done. I mean, they've won four in a row since their loss to my Syracuse. And Syracuse, by the way, Tate had to shoot 63% to somehow be able to upset the Tar Heels. But no,
I'll say this, Harry. Syracuse, if Villanova can use the Carolina win that they had back in November and carry that as like the reason why they should be in the tournament, then why can't Syracuse do that when they actually did it in conference play? So that's all I'll say on that. Syracuse should be allowed. Yeah.
And actually, when it comes to the standings right now, Syracuse is fourth in the ACC. Not too shabby. But
shout out to our guy, Red.
Your Tar Heels against Duke. Like, you know, RJ Davis, just an incredible stud performer. Went from 16 points per game last year to almost 22 this year. He's been fantastic all season long. I know when we gave out our MVPs, our best players for the season. I gave out Armando Bacot when we did that episode on Against All Odds before the season started. RJ Davis is definitely a bit better than him and has had a better season. But still, Bacot, for what he's done, still averages a double-double. You don't see that too often in college hoops. Shot 55% so far this season. So those two together, along with the depth that Carolina has, I think they get it done against Duke.
Yeah, I just think it's a mismatch because Filipowski's playing the five. He is not a five, especially when he matches up against a real big like Bacot. And I just think it's a mismatch. And Bacot bullied him in the first game.
Right.
It was probably the best game that he played all year. The guards of Duke will be the real test with RJ, what they can do defensively against him. But Jared McCain will have something to say in this game. I think Duke will be fired up for this game. But if Carolina can play inside out and through Bacot, which has not been kind of the formula this season. Yeah, but they can still do that. And I think that's the versatility of this team is nice. Well, and Harrison Ingram, by the way, his sister's at Duke. So, you know, we got that nice little budding rivalry going on. So that'll be good.
But but it's nice to know that if things aren't going great for Davis in this game and the flow isn't so great for him, you can rely on Bacot to get it done too, which is a nice feeling.
And
a lot of teams don't have two guys like that. They do.
I feel like Carolina playing through Harrison Ingram through the paint and playing through Bacot through the post. You know, at times it's a nice just kind of like, okay, we have no other options here. We can just pound it into the big man. At least we get a shot on the board. And a lot of times, like, Bacot's best gift offensively is missed shots. You know what I mean? Driving to the basket, Elliot Cadeau missing a layup, but Bacot's there on the boards. And he can out-rebound, you know, Filipowski or Mark Mitchell or whoever's on him because he's bigger than them. I mean, he is the only true big in this game. So I wouldn't be shocked if Shire tries to play Ryan Young some more to kind of fluster Armando Bacot a little bit, kind of go big on big. But it'll be a fun game. Last thing, Harry, before I let you go, a lot of conversations about court storming. You and I, we like the fans. We are fans of fans. Your thoughts on Filipowski's amazing recovery and court stormings in general?
His amazing recovery. I love it.
It's a miracle recovery. Yeah.
I'm going to say this. Last week, I'm going to give credit to Chris Mad Dog Russo. He made, I don't know if you saw it, the point he made was spot on because, you know, enough of the crying Duke. You know, it wasn't that bad. And, you know, the Shire and the coach and the rest of the coach, a couple of the players protected Filipowski and he was fine. It was nothing. I mean, the Caitlin Clark thing was way worse than Filipowski's, right, in my opinion. And for that, you know, Duke and the players and the fans want to cry about it. But during the football season, when they upset on that Monday game, Clemson and Dabo Sweeney, that was 10 times the amount of people that stormed the court for the basketball than they
Wallace
did
Wade.
For the football game. And everybody loved it in Duke. Everybody loved it in Durham. So, oh, well, screw you, Duke.
Yeah, right? It's called being a sore loser, and it's okay. Yeah. We all do it sometimes. But the good news is that Filipowski is not sore anymore, and he's playing some of his best basketball this season.
So no complaining. No, when Carolina takes care of business, there's no complaining there.
Hey, Harry, and guess what? Kyle Filipowski coming on One Shining Podcast on March 11th. So there you go. A nice little teaser. Wow. We're gonna talk about
Must
it.
Listen.
You know what I mean? We're gonna try to figure it out. But Harry, you're the best. Where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you go. Enjoy your day.
Yeah, obviously at the Ringer podcast, on the Against All Odds podcast with Cousin Sal. Also, I'm every Wednesday, I'm on Vizen with Michael Lombardi on the Lombardi Line, giving out picks. And I think I was 4-1 this past week, so giving out picks. So pretty good. So a lot of stuff going on. Hopefully we get we're trying to get this Harry cartoon off the ground. Hopefully it'll be on your TV screen sooner than later.
I love it. Harry, you're the best. We'll have you back on the show ASAP. I appreciate all your insights, man. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it too. Thanks, pal.
There you have it. Harry from Against All Odds, the best. I could literally pepper Harry with questions all day, every day, and he would still, just laugh at everything. So he's the best. Quickly, A few shout outs I want to get through before we get out of here. I just want to shout out Harrison Ingram, season high 22 points against NC State. UNC has now won 38 of their last 44 games against State. That is an 86.4 winning percentage. Shout out Greg Barnes for that note. Roy Williams' sweater was incredible in that game. And ChatGPT says that the Kevin Keats era should be over. So if you are a believer in AI, now is the time to lock in on that. Shout out to Bronny James. Big news. His NBA draft decision on which will be decided on which teams are interested, not his projections. That is what Rich Paul, his agent, has said. So good news for everybody that is locked in on the Bronny James NBA sweepstakes ahead. It's going to be such a sweepstakes. I want to shout out Alabama security. They practice court storming protocol before the Tennessee game. This is exactly what Jay Billis wanted to see. This is what the big Jays of the world wanted to see. So Alabama, they did all that. They had the security ready and they lost the game. So that was not great. Bit of a waste of time, but you know, we'll see what happens. Arizona seniors at McHale. Great group of seniors. Love to see Caleb Love get celebrated like that. I thought that was a great day at McHale. Also, my guy Kenny Lofton got inducted into the Hall of Honor there, the Hall of Fame, whatever you want to call it. So shout out to Kenny Lofton. Shout out to Arizona. Shout out to McHale. Illinois became the first team to ever win four straight games at the Kohl Center. That was what we're going to talk about with Wisconsin, but shout out to them. Shout out to UC Irvine. They clinched a one seed in the Big West tournament for the second consecutive season. Big fan of Russell Turner out there. And, you know, they got a fun team, got some good guards, so and some good bigs. So UC Irvine, a team to watch out for. One last thing that I wanted to shout out. It was 36 years ago yesterday that Rick Smits played his final game in a Marist uniform. Rick scored a then program record 45 points. He wore number 45. So that was a nice moment in time. And they beat St. Francis. I thought that was a nice little Marist moment in time. So we love to see that. We are going to be heading to North Carolina this week. I am leaving in a couple of days. I'm so excited to get back home, see my family, see friends. We're going to do the live show on Friday night. We got a fun show. We got guests locked in. We got Wes Durham, who's going to be there. We got James Michael McAdoo, who is going to be in the building. We got my guy Mark Campbell, who played on the 09 National Championship team, guarded Barack Obama once upon a time. So we're going to talk about some of that stuff. And then we got another special guest that I'm not going to say the name, but I'm very excited to have on the show. So it's going to be good. It's going to be fun. And I'm excited to have Kyle back to have some Bojangles and some cheer wine and some good times in North Carolina. We hope we can see you there at the Carolina Theater. Kyle, anything else before we get out of here?
That's it. Just got to go to the dry cleaners and get my stuff ready because I will be stepping out.
Yes.
In North Carolina.
You're going to be wearing a suit or something. It sounds like you're one of the dry cleaners. My God.
Well, no, you know, you got to dry clean Tommy Bahamas. You can't throw them in
Oh, good.
But you know, I might even be popping out a long sleeve Tommy. So I've never really done that before, but I don't think the weather's permitting to be a short sleeve guy yet.
Well,
but,
you can always wear a jacket over the short sleeve Tommy if you need to. You know what I mean?
I've been kicking around a couple ideas.
You got versatility. You got versatility. So we're going to have a good time. We're excited to see everybody in person. Again, it is Friday night at the Carolina Theater, One Shining Podcast Live. Shout out to Elizabeth Fearman for helping us get everything together. She's the best. And thanks to everybody for listening to One Shining Podcast. And the next time you'll hear us will be the live show that we do in North Carolina. So get prepared for that. And we will see you on Saturday morning on One Shining Podcast. We'll see you then. Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel. Again, you must be 21 and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with the Kansas Star Casino LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 533-42 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.